CB Shuckin' Jive.
All you racing fans, stand up, clap your feet. I mean, clap your heads.
Welcome to the Goat Rodeo.
CRN Studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Racing Through History.
Hello, race fans. Welcome to this edition, this Valentine edition of the Goat Rodeo. Believe it or not, I just thought of that.
Woo.
A split second before I said it. Can you believe that I would do something like that, actually shoot from the hip on the intro to this show? But I did. Happy Valentine's Day out there to all you Valentines. We just tickled to death that you guys, gals, and folks are listening to us here tonight. Thank you.
TV up, Jeff?
It always takes me... What you have to understand is I have to start the stream, do the opening, and then wait for somebody else to talk so that I can then go over to Facebook, get the embed code, take it back to the website, and post it for the TV to be up.
Maybe we need to start doing a pre-show five minutes ahead of time.
It's impossible for me to get the TV stream up
and
do this intro at the same time. I know that you guys think I'm good, but I'm not that good. Okay?
Okay, we agree.
Okay. All right, Hugh. All right, Hugh, cut it out. All right, folks, somebody start talking about Daytona, and I'll put the TV stream up.
All right. Jack.
Well, Daytona's coming up. A lot of things going on.
All right, so. Next.
Starting this weekend with the, what do they call that race now? The
Daytona 500?
No.
The Advance.
What is it called?
Auto Parts Clash.
Clash.
No. Advance
Auto Parts.
Don't say Clash.
Why not?
Say Advance.
And also the ARCA race, I assume.
It's the Advance ARCA race.
Okay. And the vintage cars will be right up on the parade at 10 o'clock. Bobby, is that correct? 10 o'clock?
I think so.
Yeah, cool, man. Coming up.
Yeah. Jack, you're planning on going?
I'm definitely going. Tim's going,
but he won't be there for the parade.
But I'll be wearing my Goat Rodeo hat now that I see you with one. So if anybody out there sees me, come up and introduce yourself. Love to meet you.
Jack will probably be the only one there with a Goat Rodeo hat.
I will be the only one with a Goat Rodeo hat.
That's a bummer.
But people will see you and say, wow.
Yeah.
And they'll want one.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I tell them, call Hugh.
That's right.
He's got them at a discount now.
We can get them for you.
Limited availability.
Yep.
That makes them worth more.
That's right.
Absolutely. The price went up.
Hugh's discount cigarette outlet.
Hot biscuits at
all times. But speaking of racing, I went out to Myrtle Beach Speedway this past weekend.
And the TV stream is up now.
A fantastic race at Myrtle Beach. One of the best ones I've seen at the Speedway in years. Good crowd on hand, beautiful day. I mean, it's just one of those fantastic deals. 28 late models, four wide coming down the home stretch.
28 late models is a good deal, man.
Oh, man.
I don't care how you cut it.
Modified race was a dud, trying to go as slow as they could to save tires. Most of the cars from the Northeast, plus the Myers brothers.
How long was their race?
Their race, I think, was 50 laps, if I remember correctly. Might have been. No, yeah, 50 laps. 50 laps.
Well, if I understand correctly, the NASCAR Modified Wheeling Tour is not just confined to North and South anymore. There is a tour.
Correct.
And the date and the locales are everywhere.
And the first race is in Myrtle Beach.
Right.
in March.
But this was not it. This was like a tune-up, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah, the first race is in March. I was thinking, where else could NASCAR go, that, I guess, in this general area for that type of event?
Concord
or...
Hickory, maybe.
Or Sobo or Wilson. I mean, not Wilson, but Kenley,
yep.
I guess.
Yep. I mean, racing, short track racing is starting off early this year. It's a big race. You know, 2 weeks ago, it was a big race at Dillon. Last week, Myrtle Beach. There's a big super late model race at Greenville Pick'em Speedway this weekend. So, you know, it's healthy or healthier.
Who won the modified race? Do you recall?
I don't remember the guy's name. He's one of the guys from Northeast, which I don't know a whole lot of those. I think it was Don something or other.
Was you said the Myers brothers were
there?
Yeah,
Myers brothers were there. Not Burt Myers, but what's the other one? Is it Jason Myers? Or?
Yep.
Whichever other Myers was, he finished second.
All right. So I've spammed everybody I can on Facebook.
Can't hear you, Jeff.
You can't hear me?
We've lost technicality.
We've lost Jeff.
You can't hear me?
I've got Jeff.
Can't
I
hear
got
you.
Jeff.
Tim can hear me.
I can hear you.
Still can't hear you.
Huh.
I don't know about going out over there, but we can't
hear
you.
Can you folks on the air hear me? So now I got to flip over there and look at the chat, and 17 seconds later they'll tell me.
Well, I'm watching chat, and, you know, if you need to do something
Myers
else.
Brothers.
I'm good. All right.
Now you're back.
I didn't do a thing.
You did something.
I didn't touch a thing.
You did something.
Didn't do a thing.
The mystery.
The mystery. Solved.
Devin says she hears you.
Okay, good. That's it.
Alex says he wishes he didn't.
Thanks, Alex.
Alex is a nardy.
That's great. All right, cool. That's good. Daytona, it's finally here. Racing, back every year.
And they're making a big deal out of this parts that you can't change stuff this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's back in the news again.
Yeah, and I'm not sure anybody actually knows what the rule is, because I've heard it about four different ways.
Well, here they keep adding moving. It's got moving parts to it. here, I was just reading that. If you have a crash, if you've got body damage, et cetera, you've got 5 minutes to fix it, and it's got to be on pit road.
5 minutes counting when? The first time you come in, or are you coming out and go back in?
That's a real judgment call. Where does the clock, where does it start?
I heard it all adds up. It's all consecutive. If you come in for 3 minutes and go out, you can come in another 2 minutes, and that's your 5 minutes. And I've heard... 5 minutes each time you come in, so I don't know.
No,
another
15 minutes.
Another 5 minutes,
period.
Another codicil to that rule is if you have mechanical damage, your transmission tears up at Watkins Glen, for example, you can come in and work on that all you want to. You can go to the garage area, replace it, whatever, go back out. And the clock, the time penalty thing is not an issue. But now how about if your drive shaft comes out and knocks off the rear fender? Then what?
You're screwed.
Yeah.
How does that work? You got mechanical damage and body damage that was caused.
I bet they haven't thought of that till it happens.
Yeah. No, but I wrote the legendorial on what you're talking about tonight, and I did all the research. But as you said, I wrote that legendorial Sunday.
But you know there will be them trying to
change the rules twice.
It was a mechanical problem, and we had to fix this fender.
But it tore the fender off of it.
All right, time out.
All right.
We have to answer a question on chat. People are asking, where are we tonight?
I can't hear you.
You've
again,
disappeared
by the way.
Again.
You're coming and going, sir. Man. Where are we? I could hear that, but I couldn't hear it through my ears.
Yeah, people on chat are
now asking, you're back.
I haven't touched anything. This is weird.
It's weird.
Well, people are asking where we are. Okay.
That was the background picture is from Shelby, North Carolina.
Where do you even see that at?
Right there.
On the radio right section, on radio TV.
Look there. Look.
I'm talking. Okay.
Pits at Shelby, North Carolina, 2012, when the what was it, North Carolina Vintage?
Yeah.
It was
the, one of the greatest days in the history of
wasn't
vintage
it, though? That's
racing.
Great, man.
Was that day.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
What do you click on to get it?
Radio TV. Kick the Radio TV tab on racersreunion.com.
Oh, okay. Ha, there we are. Cool.
Vintage National Championship.
Well, right, I can't hear you now.
Now can you?
Good. I wonder
what's
if it's
going
on
with
box.
This. Can you hear me now? I bet it's out there in the box.
It's the Russians.
I think the Russians hacked our box.
They did.
No.
Check
no,
the main
no.
input, Jack. Check. Can you hear it, Jack? Okay. Well, the guys in the studio can't hear me. Those of you out there know that you can, so we don't really care what they think anyway. That means I can talk about them, and they don't know about it, which is really good. So,
okay.
So there we go. So there you
yeah,
are.
To those, can anybody hear anything?
Everybody
hear
hears
hear
everything. Everybody
Popper,
hears everything.
Hear Jeff, yeah.
Except
hear
you guys don't hear me.
No, now we can hear you.
Now we're back.
That's Jack. He's screwing with the box.
Okay.
Not a good job. I'm hearing
that. Back to the picture in the back. That was Shelby, North Carolina, in April of 2012.
Yep.
One of the great moments in the rebirth of vintage racing and our vintage racing.
The
in
VNC,
particular.
The Vintage National Championship.
Yeah, that was a high water mark, ladies and gentlemen. That for various reasons, none of us could control, it just didn't pan out for the long term.
Well, the fact that we created a racetrack at Shelby, North Carolina for that event, and that they ran it for two or three years after that, is pretty significant.
And that it was on the same side of the old Cleveland County Fairgrounds track, which was steeped in NASCAR history anyway. It was just a perfect storm.
It was a great day. It really was a great day.
The only regret is it just didn't keep going. You know.
Yep.
And we've talked about some of the reasons. One of the very primary reason was the catch fence issue.
That was a major factor in that whole deal, in that no one would insure me to do that race without a catch fence, but because the Cleveland County Fairgrounds was grandfathered in on their policy, we were able to run it under their insurance. And we were just an additional insured on that deal, and that worked. Okay, I don't know that that's the case today, and I'm sure that's going to be an issue. It only makes common sense that you have a catch fence, because I can tell you, Mike Sykes was up there in that stand flagging the race, and I went up there behind him a few times. I felt very vulnerable out there, you know, and you know, he'd be out there anyway, even if there was a catch fence. But all the people in the stands, I mean, it was kind of a scary thing. But the other thing that impacted whether we do those event, whether we followed it up with another event somewhere else, was that we were unable to get a single sponsor for that race. Okay, that was 2012. The height of the recession had taken its toll. Nobody was spending any money at all. And the thing that I remember from my perspective, and you guys probably didn't feel this like I did, was that I went into that race, the day of the race, thinking I was going to lose everything.
Can you hear Jack?
I can hear Jeff
through
the glass. Yeah.
Don't worry about it, Hugh. So, I thought I was going to lose everything. And the fortunate thing was that we filled the stands.
Yeah, it was great.
And I broke even, okay? But that's the only event up until that time that I had ever done that I didn't have a sponsor for. Yeah. So I put a quietus on all events as a result of that event, and I didn't do another event until I did the first Salt Air Jam year before last, which is a segue in this thing.
That Salt Air Jam thing come up?
May 19th, okay, coming up. So happy. Go to saltairjam.com. You can order tickets. We're so pleased that as of Monday morning at 6 a.m., we could announce that Edwin McCain is our headliner. And we're going to open the show at 1 o'clock. Mr. 50 is going to start playing at 2 o'clock. Jim Quick and Coastline at 3 o'clock. Tim Clark Band at 4:30. Edwin McCain is coming on at about 7, somewhere in there. Maddie and Cicely Russo are going to be playing. We're going to have a large time at the North Myrtle Beach Sports Complex out there, the park and sports complex. SaltAirJam.com. Order your tickets. You get a special out there now if you order more than two and 10 or less. More than two, less than 11, you can get them for $20. They'll be $25 in advance after we close off that limited time special and 30 at the gate. Edwin McCain, the Salt Air Jam. And might I say that this production of The Goat Rodeo is brought to you by the Salt Air Jam.
And Salt Air Jam's all for a good cause, too, right?
Yeah, we benefit cystic fibrosis with Salt Air Jam. As everybody probably listening to this knows, my grandson Eli has CF, and we learned about all of the issues faced with CF patients, the expense, the drugs are thousands of dollars a month. And in Eli's case, he has been approved for a brand new drug that will hopefully extend his life and possibly keep him from having to have a lung transplant. The cost of that drug, to administer that drug, is $300,000 a year.
Wow.
Okay. So that's the battle ahead. And there are a lot of folks out there with kids or children that have cystic fibrosis and brothers, sisters, whatever, that have that, and they need support. So that's why we do Salt Air Jam.
And yeah, but Jeff, who could possibly afford $300,000 a year?
It has to. Right now, MUSC is battling to get the expense covered. And thank God for MUSC, one of the top.
I know, that just made my heart stop. I can't believe that.
Well, the alternative is as bad as it sounds, a slow death. You know.
Yeah, I know.
So, I mean, they'll get rejected and turned down several times, but eventually they'll get it approved. They've assured us they'll get it approved. So, that's what Salt Air Jam is all about. This year we added a golf tournament to it. Diamondback Golf Club has stepped up to help us do the golf tournament, and we're going to raise as much money as we can for Salt Air Jam. We're happy that last year we raised $2,785. Doesn't sound like a lot, but every little bit helps. You see how big the task is, and this year hopefully we can double that. We'll see. You know, so there. That's my segue. It is about 18. It's 17 minutes and 40 seconds after the hour. So I vote that we go right to Cody. He has breaking news. Cody, take it away.
Oh, thank you. Not quite breaking news, but it's just a theory. I read it yesterday from beyondtheflag.com. So this blog, basically this journalist has talked to several inside NASCAR people, unnamed, and he says that Carl Edwards will go to Penske in 2018. And basically, I won't read the whole thing for you, but what it boils down to, we obviously know that Daniel Suarez brought Aris to NASCAR, and they are a very wealthy company. Suarez's father is a very wealthy man. He is planning to buy Joe Gibbs Racing in 2018, keep all the same teams and same drivers and same crew, which to me that makes sense because I'm not really sure about J.D. Gibbs and his health, so maybe that give the coach some time to be with him to get out of the sport. Apparently Penske paid off Carl Edwards to hold off for this year. I think it was said $15 million to sit out this year, and they would have an open spot for him in 2018 to come back. So it kind of makes sense.
Cody,
but it's very interesting to me.
Did you said that Senior or Mr. Suarez is going to buy Joe Gibbs Racing?
That's what this article states. Now, whether it's credible or not, you know, it definitely makes sense. It says Suarez comes from a wealthy Mexican family. His father's assets includes a broadcasting company that has been pitching for the rights to televise NASCAR in Mexico. More to the point, Suarez Sr. has made a deal with Joe Gibbs to buy a Gibbs team, which is Toyota's factory-backed operation. It says that Suarez Sr. intends to keep Gibbs' current team intact, including its partnership with Toyota and TRD. Meanwhile, Edwards is being paid more than $15 million to sit out this year and possibly run a third Penske car in 2018. It states that he would most likely run a two-year program, and by the time he steps out, Ryan Blaney would come in full-time.
And of course, all that speculation has been denied.
Right.
But the question that I have is Toyota and the other sponsors okay with that?
Yeah.
Even if Gibbs agrees to sell it, that doesn't necessarily guarantee that he will get to keep the TRD nameplate and the Toyota affiliation.
Right.
So, yeah, lots of questions. That all brings up another whole batch of questions to be answered. But I guess that's kind of the NASCAR way.
Yeah. I can kind of see it happening, really. But
well, yeah.
That's just me, so.
It all seemed a little sudden and a little too convenient.
Right.
When it happened. So this is probably a little more believable to me than Carl Edwards and Joe Gibbs' version.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll see.
And Joe was here in Myrtle Beach this past weekend at Myrtle Beach Speedway with his grandson racing, who qualified third. Finished 14th, qualified third.
And I was reading earlier something about J.D. Gibbs, so, you know, it kind of also makes sense that maybe he could sell the team to spend more time with J.D. or...
What's wrong with J.D.?
I can't remember, to be honest with you. I thought it was something with his brain, maybe, but I'm not going to say because I don't know.
Yeah, he's had some medical problems. I've seen that also, but I don't remember exactly what it was.
All right.
So that's all I got. I just wanted to bring that up. It caught me off guard when I read it yesterday, and I thought our panel of experts would like to break it down.
Well, that would mean Carl Edwards goes back to Ford.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
yep.
I don't know if Ford assuming had anything to do
Penske
with
Penske stays with Ford and doesn't go back with Chrysler, which has also been rumored.
Another question mark out
yeah,
there.
Which has also been rumored.
Well, Alex says J.D. has early onset dementia.
I haven't heard anything recently, but last year there was some talk about Chrysler, during the offseason, Chrysler getting back into it, and some of the pundits seemed to think that the natural progression of that would be with Penske. I haven't heard anything recently.
But they're the top four team, unless something changed with Stuart Haas for this year.
Yep, it seems plausible to me that Chrysler would get back into it.
Good points. All good points. All right, Tim, take it away.
Okay, the legendorial for this Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2017, is entitled No Love in This Valentine.
Well,
if other people were here outside of
I have been complimenting NASCAR as far as my ability to so compliment the organization quite a bit since the press conference of a few weeks ago in which the new rules for the 2017 season were announced.
Nothing so far. Well, you can hear for yourself.
Can y'all hear me?
Hugh, stop talking, please. Tell him to stop talking. All right, Tim, take it away.
All right, can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
All right. After careful consideration of all that was said at the press conference and fully aware that not one person on that stage dared to question what NASCAR was doing for fear of reprisal, I had made up my mind to accept it and give it a chance. Actually, it was a long discussion with my brother Richard that pointed out the things I had failed to see in the initial, as usual for me, knee-jerk reaction. I am now ready, set, go for a good, if not great, 2017. Or I was. The words tweak, enhancement, fan experience, and on-track product are words added to the lexicon of NASCAR speak since Brian France took over the sport. While this is not a legendorial intending to bash Brian France or NASCAR, I would like to say a few words about this new vocabulary being tossed about on the shores in Daytona. First, tweak. This word is used by NASCAR meaning to make adjustments NASCAR feels will enhance the on-track product for a better fan experience. Really? Did y'all get all that? What I see in those five letters is the ability of Brian France to do as he pleases, when he pleases, whether or not it makes good sense. Remember the Michael Waltrip team fiasco at Richmond a couple of years back when Martin Truex was bounced from the chase and Jeff Gordon added by Brian France because, quote, I can, end quote. I remember how unfair I thought it was to Martin Truex, who, in my opinion, did nothing more wrong than being behind the wheel of a Michael Waltrip car. It was Clint Bowyer, was it not, with the itchy arm? As far as enhancing the fan experience, I see the new rules for 2017 as providing better planning for bathroom breaks and trips to the fridge for snacks. I honestly see nothing in this rules package that is going to make the on-track product better for the fans. I think the format is a good one for excitement purposes, for requiring Watson, the IBM computer so well known for its Jeopardy appearance, to be able to calculate the points at the end of each race weekend. Fans who will go to the track will still enjoy the races as they always have, and maybe even a little more, as this format should remove the need for those bogus debris cautions. I had posted a forum comment last week asking whether or not you listeners would prefer stories from my memory of great racing experiences. Two people answered, both mentioning they love the stories of the past. Jeff continued his response with wanting me to continue to go into my tirades if something ticked me off. I really had a good story planned for this week about the 1964 Daytona 500 when NASCAR released the, quote, official for the time being, quote, ruling about cars being damaged in the race, being allowed only 5 total minutes on pit road to repair the damage. If the car is required to go behind the pit wall or uses more than 5 minutes to repair the damage, it is out of the race. Period. End of story. Even as I allowed myself a couple of days to consider the impact of this rule, I still came down to the fact that this rule is about as stupid as anything NASCAR has done in the past 15 years. Case in point, most of you listening or reading this later should remember the miraculous story of Benny Parsons' sole Winston Cup championship. That Sunday in Rockingham was the Sunday that showed the true spirit of racers, at least the racers of that time. I was at that race and watched through the fence as I don't know how many guys from different crews came over to help Benny get that car back on the track to earn the points he needed for that championship. That is the type story that made this sport the wonderful example of human endeavor that it is, or was. I'm happy that I was there to see that piece of history unfold before my eyes. I have read several articles over the past week how the championship picture would have been different several times if this rule had been around. One article supposedly computed all 7 of Jimmy's Johnson's championships throughout each season and opined that had such a rule existed for the past 15 years, Jimmy would have one legitimate championship. The same genius said Gordon would have only 2. Even with the convoluted way NASCAR manipulates Kyle Busch championship, had that rule been around, Kyle still wouldn't have won. That statement is not intended to disparage Kyle in the least. His championship is a product of what NASCAR wanted. That's enough for tonight. The latest tweak or enhancement is, in my eyes, another example of shooting yourself in the foot by NASCAR. And before I go out from that, I need to know if any of y'all can find a picture of Ed Negree's 1964 Ford, preferably in color. If you can kind of post that online or something, I've got a friend that has found supposedly a 64 Ford that he wants to restore in honor of Ned Degree and wants to get it right. Thank you very much. Back to you, Jeff.
Thank you, Tim. And let me clarify what I ask about your rants. I mean, this show wouldn't be the same without your rants. Even if you only give us one every few weeks, that's fine. That's all I ask.
No, okay. Well, you know, when things like this come up, that's a rant.
That's a rant. That's good.
But we'll have some more good stories.
We like it. We like it. Thank you, man. Thank you very much. Hughes, you. Views on the much. News and more news from stuff. You and stuff.
Yep.
Go ahead, you take it away.
All right, fellas. 881 NASCAR starts, 14 poles, 5 wins, 60 years old when he started his last Daytona 500, 33 starts in the Daytona 500, more than any other driver. Anybody got any ideas?
Jeff Gilder.
Dave Marcus.
I'd say it's
close.
Dave Marcus, amazing. Marcus. I should have known that.
He finished in 1975. He finished second in the points to Richard Petty, which was his highest points finish for a season. In 2001, he was awarded the Buddy Schumann Award. Dave Marcus epitomizes the independent driver. He was pretty much the last driver who not only built his own cars, but he built his own engines, designed his own engines. And for a very long time, and maybe for most of his career, he only had one full-time crew member. The rest of them were just pickups on race day. When you look at today's mega teams and all the people that they fly in for just specific purposes, somebody like Dave Marcus is just an absolute wonder.
I agree 100%. Love Dave Marcus.
That they could do that. And the thing that I always remember about Dave Marcus is that you always saw him in a Goodyear hat because Goodyear gave him tires, and he didn't care who was sponsoring what, even for his Winston Cup pictures. If you'll notice, he was the only one wearing a Goodyear hat.
And wingtips.
And his trademark wingtips, because early on he found that those things had thick enough soles that it didn't burn the heat from the exhaust through the floorboard didn't burn his feet. But yes, the wingtips and the Goodyear hat were sure enough Dave Marcus trademarks.
Awesome.
Just with Daytona 500 coming up, it dawned on me that maybe some of us should go back a few years and remember some of the real good guys in the sport and the
like
guys.
Any of us would ever do that.
That yeah, right.
You want to hear my Dave Marcus story?
Yeah, tell us, Tim.
Look in the pictures on my page here on Racers Reunion, and when Dave won the race at Talladega and he ran out of gas coming down pit road heading for Victory Lane, I was there on top of the motorhome, and it had come down, blue jeans, cut off shorts, and no shirt. I pushed his car into Victory Lane. That picture is on my page here on Racers.
There's a great memory. Yeah.
It is.
That's also a good trivia question.
What's the question?
Who was the redneck in the cutoff shorts that pushed Dave Marcus's car to, into Victory Lane on that race day?
Well, you could only see me from the back, so, you know.
Yeah.
I got a better deal with Darrell Waltrip because I'm sitting on the hood of his car.
There you go.
The Darnell.
All right, Coastal Jack Walker. It's time for a Carolina Race Place historic race finish. Take it away, Coastal Jack.
All right. Tonight we are going to... Cody, you listening? Lakewood Speedway, Atlanta, Georgia.
There we go.
Lakewood Speedway, located a few miles from downtown Atlanta, Georgia, opened for its first race in 1917. The one-mile dirt oval hosted several types of races over the years, including NASCAR Grand National Racing from 1951 to 1959. Lee Petty won the final Grand National race at the track on June 14, 1959. The track fell on hard times in the early 60s as it operated as an outlaw track. For the 1967 season, the track tried to get a fresh start with a new promoter group and backing from Atlanta Mayor Hartsfield. For the 1967 season, the track also got new clay and other capital improvements. But the biggest change was a NASCAR sanction. There were 7 big NASCAR late model sportsman races held at Lakewood in 1967. The first late model sportsman race of the season was on May 14th. Bill France was even there to wave the green flag as 12,000 fans turned out to see Doug Cox of Greenville, South Carolina, take the checkered flag. The second race of the 1967 season at Lakewood was on Sunday, June 11th. It was the Red Line 100. This race had entries from Curtis Turner, Tiny Lund, T.C. Hunt, Joe Lee Johnson, Bruce Brantley, and many other regional late model sportsman drivers. Early leaders in the 100-lap race were Tiny Lund and Tuto Estes. Both drivers would retire from the race with mechanical problems. On lap 60, Joe Lee Johnson was leading but pulled into the pits with mechanical problems, which ended his day. The next leader was Little Bud Moore from Charleston, South Carolina, driving a 1964 Chevelle. According to Mike Bell's article in the Pioneer Pages magazine, Curtis Turner had brake problems around the halfway point in the race, pulled into the pits for repairs, and returned to the race three laps down. Turner blazed his way through the field and by lap 69 passed Little Bud Moore for the lead. Damn. Turner and Moore continued running 1 and 2 all the way to the checkered flag on lap 100. They finished two laps ahead of the rest of the field. Curtis Turner won $1,000 for the victory before 7,000 dusty fans. Turner was driving a 1964 Chevelle built by Bruce Brantley. All right, here's the way they finished at Lakewood Speedway for the 100-lap late model sportsman race, June 11, 1967. The winner, Curtis Turner, Roanoke, Virginia, in a 64 Chevelle, followed by Little Bud Moore, Charleston, South Carolina, also in a 64 Chevelle. Eddie McDonald, Tifton, Georgia, a 63 Ford. Jody Ridley, Chatsworth, Georgia, a 55 Ford. Jim Hunter, Knoxville, Tennessee, a 64 Chevy. Larry Hona, Decatur, Georgia, a 55 Chevy. Cecil Gordon, Horseshoe, North Carolina, a 55 Chevy. Mike Adams, Seneca, South Carolina, a 55 Chevy. Bobby Jones, Greenville, South Carolina, a 60 Ford. Finishing 10th, Johnny Hunt, Powder Springs, Georgia, a 59 Plymouth. Willie McDonald, Albany, Georgia, a 61 Chevy. Jack Cochran, Greenville, South Carolina, a 55 Chevy. Gerald Hall, Atlanta, Georgia, a 55 Chevy. James Norton, Harperville, Georgia, a 63 Mercury. Bruce Brantley came in 15th from Chamblee, Georgia, in a 55 Chevy. Jeff Hawkins, Greenville, South Carolina, a 64 Ford. Hugh McMichael, Loganville, Georgia, a 63 Ford. James Kraft, Tucker, Georgia, a 63 Ford. Billy Scott, Union, South Carolina, a 64 Ford. Al Carney, Atlanta, Georgia, a 56 Chevy, came in 20th. Then when I have some other drivers that were in the race, but no finishing position was given. Joe Lee Johnson, Chattanooga, Tennessee. Tiny Lund, Cross, South Carolina. Tuto Estes, Knoxville, Tennessee. T.C. Hunt, Atlanta, Georgia. And Barry Bogoro from Greenwood, South Carolina. So that's the way they finished. Lakewood Speedway, Atlanta, Georgia. 100-lap late model sportsman race, June 11th, 1967. Bobby, anything that interests you in that lineup of drivers?
Lakewood was a mile
mile dirt, yeah. And they were talking about paving it for the 68 season, but that never happened.
One thing I noticed was the wide range of your models, 55 to 64.
Oh, yeah, all over the place.
That was, of course, today that would be absolutely unheard of. Well, today you don't even know what year model it is because it's a corporate vehicle.
Yeah.
But
that's true.
But then it was what? NASCAR, when they were still using your models, got down to two or three.
Well, this was a sportsman race.
Yes, I know.
yeah, that would have been typical for 55 Chevrolets and 64 Chevelles at that time.
67, but that was about the end of 55, so
yeah,
they didn't go much further
than
that.
No, not much further. The Chevelle onslaught.
Yeah, the Chevelles were big time.
I noticed somebody was driving a 55 Ford.
Yep.
I couldn't believe that.
Jody Redley.
Yeah, several people. Yeah, 55 Fords made good race cars at that time. Curtis Turner was in a Chevelle, as was little. I bet the little Bud. I wonder if that was
the
number 87.
Yeah, probably the one.
The Ronnie Hopkins car.
I'm betting that it was. I didn't have the numbers on most of these.
That car was for sure in action in 68, because that's when it was winning all those races at Columbia. But I don't know about 67.
But that was a good field of drivers.
Yeah.
You know, think about a 1 mile dirt track. In the south, the dust.
And the dust, yeah.
June the 11th. But how many? 7,000 people? 8,000?
Yeah, 7,000, I think is what I said. There was 11 at the first race of the season.
There was a lot of people that ended up in the lake because of the dust.
Yep. And they had a new guardrail, and a lot of people hit the guardrail in this race. There's several caution flags. I got most of this information on this particular race out of the Pioneer Pages in an article Mike Bell did. But really, there wasn't a whole lot of detail to it.
You know, Lakeview continued in operation off and on into the 70s, the late 70s.
Maybe even later than that.
79 was the last race.
Was that all-pro race or something like that?
Yeah, it was that one Leon Sales won last.
It was always dirt, though.
Yeah.
It was always dirt.
It was never paved.
It was an NDR racer, I think. Possibly, or in that era, it made it to that.
Who was the guy that we talked about or talked to or learned about through something who raced there and had the law chasing him and escaped out the back? Cody, you remember that story?
Roy Hall.
Yeah, it was one of those. Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been a lot earlier than this.
Yeah. Well, I just remember that story. Just remember.
But, you know, in 67, Bobby, if they would have paved Lakewood like they were thinking about in 68, that might have saved it. Because all the NASCAR tracks, short tracks, were pretty much going to pavement around that same time.
I would guess the rationale was if we pave Lakewood, it'll hurt Atlanta, the big track.
Yeah, could be. But it was a separate business. So.
Yep.
One thing you're talking about, the dust, I'm pretty sure it was that group of organizers in the mid-60s. They spent about $100,000 on chemicals to try and keep the dust down, and it rained that night. Yep. Washed all away.
Oh, man. I thought it was interesting they had the backing of the mayor. The mayor was all for it. Mayor Hart.
Because in the 40s, the Atlanta government hated it because all the outlaws drove there, and they didn't want it. They didn't want Atlanta to be known as the outlaw capital, so they hated it in the 40s. So, it is surprising.
Which reminds me, Jeff, you went to the Monster Truck Show last week, and we didn't get to talk a lot about that.
Yeah.
Well, 2 weeks ago, I guess. But the thing that still has got me impressed with the Monster Trucks is how they won the political battle that we lost.
No kidding, man.
They won the same battle that we lost.
I think timing is the thing there, you know. When they came along and people were more open-minded to that sort of thing, and they kind of eased into it. They didn't really go in like a bull, you know.
One thing that is in their favor is that they're all inside an arena that's closed up. And if you're even in the parking
lot,
you can't hear them.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah.
You can't hear them, you can't see them, you can't smell them. Yeah. So unless you're on the venue grounds, you don't even know it's happening.
Yeah.
So you don't get the church people, all the naysayers.
What is the cost of tickets to go to one of these?
$25 to $35, depending on where you sit.
That is probably a moneymaker.
Yeah.
Especially if they only have about 8 competitors to pay.
And Dustin looked at the video from the Friday night race, and he said there wasn't many people in there. Mm. But the night we went, it was well attended. Mm. It wasn't full, but it was pretty full.
Here's the other thing that I noticed, the age groups and the cultural basis and all of that are still stuff that NASCAR would be
very
craving.
It's very diverse.
It's a totally cross section of society.
Absolutely.
That you could not define it as, because it is a melting. I mean, it's cross.
It's a cultural education just to go there and watch.
Well, they have managed to attract the little kids.
Yep.
And just
all of them.
Just
all
like McDonald's, if you can attract the little kids, they will grab their parents by the wrist and drag them
almost
to whatever.
Force them to take it.
That's right.
Like I used to do my daddy, trying to get him to take me to Coastal Speedway.
Exactly. So, whether they intended it or not, they have hit the right nerve. If you can attract the little kids, then they will drag their parents, their grandparents, their aunts and uncles, their older siblings, anybody that that's charged with looking after them will have to go with them.
So, but the thing about all that is, it's acceptable to these soccer moms. That's the thing, that just because the kids want to go don't mean that the moms want to take them. But in this case, they do. That's the part that I don't know how they done that, but that was a huge victory, one that NASCAR racing has never, to this day, has never won.
Yeah, probably never will.
You know, I was thinking exactly what you were saying, Bobby, and that was kind of like you said a few weeks ago. When I was at Myrtle Beach Speedway this past week, when Costa Margaret and I were there, sitting right in front of us was a man probably 35, mid-30s, and his son that was probably about 6. And that kid was getting into it. And he had his arm around his daddy, and his daddy was pointing, all this kind of stuff. I mean, they were getting into it. And we need more of that.
Yeah, we do. We've said it over and over and over again.
That's what we need.
The fandom is led by generation.
Yes.
And that's where NASCAR blew it.
Yep.
When they dropped their main generation, they lost two in the process. Now they got to build it back.
Yep.
Because most of us were fans because of our dads.
Yep.
Yeah.
I started to take a picture of that from behind and post it and just say, this is what we need.
This is what's missing.
I'd have done that.
Yep. Great point, though. It is. It's all right, Bopper. Take it away, man.
Racing is definitely up and running this past weekend. The Georgia, Florida portion of Dirt Speed Weeks began at Golden Isle this past weekend, Thursday. Well, it was practice on Thursday, racing Friday and Saturday. And we had a local contingent, Bill Tripp, and some guys took a motor home. And went Thursday and had a grand old time. Had a spot right there by the pit road where they come in. And in this case, they pit outside the track. So anyway, Bubba's motorhome was right there where the pit road was. And
now they shortened that track a couple of years ago because the speeds were like 140 miles an hour in the backstretch.
And on the old track, it was an oil track.
Yeah, I went to the first ever race there, actually. I was living in South Georgia in 1970 when it opened.
But they had of course, it was a big turnout and a lot of cars and everything. And it was on Lucas Oil Racing TV, which is, on the internet. And, they moved on down to East Bay this weekend, and you can see that right now, actually. But the one interesting thing that really came up in the discussions of the race was the grandstands at Golden Isle are very, very impressive for a dirt track because they're two-tiered. There's regular stands, then there's a series of, I don't know if these are press boxes, VIP booths, or everything. There's a series of them at the top of what would normally be the first layer. And then on top of that is a whole nother, like a upper tier, which goes essentially the length of the front stretch, not the whole thing. But, I mean, you don't see. Right. But do you know where those are from?
Nowhere.
I do.
You know where those are from? Those are the ones that Daytona tore down.
Oh, God.
Those are from the Super Stretch at Daytona. Golden Isle bought half of them. And I think Screven Speedway, which is also in Georgia, not all that far from bought some of them too.
Well, dirt track racing in the Georgia area is definitely alive and well.
But they had, I mean, those things was full. I mean, it ain't, you know, it's only a segment of what that total super stretch was. But the irony is they tore them down because they had too many stands at Daytona.
And they bought them and are filling them up or at least putting fans in them.
Yeah, those are probably ironic. Unused. They were fairly new stands. They hadn't been used that much.
At least they didn't get shredded and sent to a scrap sale somewhere.
Yeah, to China to make cell phones out of.
They got turned back into grandstands. So I thought that was pretty cool.
We've lost audio again.
Audio and all of that again. So
I hear you guys.
It's just you guys that can't hear. The rest of us can hear. Keep talking, yep. Bobby.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, Bobby, when that happens, everybody else can hear everything. It's just out there that can't be heard, so, yeah.
But it makes it kind of tough on us trying to talk
to one
another.
You're professionals. You can get through it.
If the Lucas, James Essex, who was the Lucas Oil late model announcer, he was announcing on the TV broadcast, he said, NASCAR's downsizing and we're upsizing. That's where I picked up on it. So anyway, I'm glad that they're being put back to use and I got.
Now, did you go?
No, I did not go. Okay. No, one of the guy that had the motorhome is one of our new vintage racers this year. He's gonna He's gonna race with us and
out of Shalott,
out of Castle Hayne.
Oh, okay.
A protege, Jack. You will
number
appreciate
number 17.
Yes,
Walt Sawalski.
I'm not lying. He is a protege of Walt. He used to go to the race with Walt.
Is that right?
Yeah. And he's got two vintage cars, and one of them's going to be B17, and the other one's going to be B19.
Is he going to have them blue and white with beat-up fenders?
Yeah. Yeah. Is he going to pull them with a 53 Studebaker? You know what the B was on Walt's car? It was for his wife's name was Barbara.
Okay.
You got to always work your wife in the racing if you possibly can.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of B names, but Barbara's not one of them.
Barbara was not one of them.
Also, speaking of Bubba, he's our new vintage guy. He's from that area. He's working on a deal to have a little vintage day show. Are you familiar with Paul's Place, Jack?
Yes, the hot dog place.
Famous hot dogs.
Yep, good hot dogs.
Yeah, been there. It's an
kind
institution.
Of a crossroad, if I remember correctly.
It's a crossroad, sort of in the middle of nowhere. But it's in Pender County, and right down the road from Paul's Place is the remains of the old Pender County Speedway, which was on the Richard Brickhouse farm of Talladega infamy.
Yep.
And so if we can get this little car show worked up sometime in March, Richard Brickhouse is supposed to be there.
Cool.
At the car show?
Yeah, at the car show.
And where is that going to be?
At Paul's Place. You've heard of it.
Yeah, I heard y'all talk about it. I have no idea where it is.
It's Pender
really
County. Anywhere.
It's in the middle of nowhere,
in
the best
middle
of my
Pender
memory.
County.
But it's been there forever. It's just everybody says Paul's Place, and you know, you think about hot dogs because that's where it is. And it looks like it was an old-timey service station.
I used to stop and get a hot dog every morning.
Well, they have a little flea market going on Saturday out in a corner of the parking lot, and that's
Where the cars.
That's where the cars and Richard Brickhouse is going to be, but yeah, he's a native of that area. So that would be if he come. That would be his first public appearance since probably he was in NASCAR.
Hmm.
And my goal is to get him in a B&B vintage car. That would be a real coup. Then
Talladega to Dublin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then Charlie Glotchback would be so mad he would come get him.
Yep.
I'll come down there and outrun him if it's the last thing I do.
We might attract several of the old NASCAR guys just because of that. Not to be outdone by Richard Brickhouse.
Yeah, I hope we don't have a boycott of the race when that happens.
We're
boycotting the show.
Tires.
Yeah.
Tires.
Talladega.
Tires won't hold up in Paul's Place.
1969. Yeah.
And grill screens.
Yeah. Wow.
So that could be big.
And y'all announced your season starts
Yes.
The races through
April the 15th, tax day. That's easy to remember.
Yep.
April 15th. Where's your first one going to be?
Dublin County Speedway.
So people take your tax refund. Come on out to Dublin Speedway.
Come on out to Dublin. Use your refund. For a ticket and a hot dog and watch the vintage guys race.
Put your tax refund to a good cause.
Dublin Speedway, speaking of Dublin, is in the running for a World of Outlaw race this year.
Seriously.
Wow. Yeah, World of Outlaw late models.
Late models?
Yeah. Possibly, very possibly. They're just trying to nail down a date that makes, when you get those national tours, you try to catch them when they're at least in your part of the country. You know, they're going to Gaffney and they're going to Federal already this year, and you would think that that would be a logical.
Yeah.
But the World of Outlaw man didn't want to do that. He thought it would hurt. Federal if
too close.
If they had Dublin and Federal on the same weekend, and that's probably makes sense. So they got to figure out a good time to have them. But that would be huge on the local scene to get the World of Outlaws. And so maybe that can happen. So yeah, Jack, I agree. Local racing, Saturday night racing, seems to have a lot of vitality.
Yeah, it really has kind of got a second life, a little Geritol or something here in the last year or so.
Well, it seems to coincide with the lack of enthusiasm for cup racing.
Can I get an amen for the brother?
Yeah,
we've had a lack of enthusiasm for the last 5-6 years.
Yep.
It just seems like this year and last year, it's kind of a groundswell for short track.
We saw it happening 3 years ago, slowly coming back.
Yeah, it's coming.
Last year,
coming
it grabbed some momentum. Yeah. Great to see it, you know.
Yeah. And there's a lot of big money races going on throughout the country in short track racing.
Yeah.
Well, they're racing every night this week at East Bay, for example.
Exactly.
Every single night.
And Ocala. And New Smyrna.
Tony Stewart was in a sprint car race this past weekend in Ocala.
Yeah.
Got in a big controversy with.
Got mad and
got
left.
Mad
took
and
his
left.
Toys
yeah.
and
not
went home.
Not Tony.
Yep.
He didn't get mad.
Got
took
mad.
His toys and went home.
That's a vicious rumor.
He was not in a good mood from what I heard.
Huh.
Yeah, me either. So
he was probably smiling as he drove out.
Yeah.
You know.
But he owns that series.
Got mad with his own series.
As he drove out Tony in his Stewart. Hearse.
Yeah.
Is he still driving that hearse?
I don't know. All right, folks, let me remind you that this edition of The Goat Rodeo is brought to you in part by Salt Air Jam, saltairjam.com. The 2017 Salt Air Jam is May 19th at the North Myrtle Beach Park and Sports Complex. Get your tickets at saltairjam.com. Click on the buy tickets or book tickets, whatever that thing says. And get going. We have a golf tournament at Diamondback the following day. The concert will start at 1 p.m. Gates open at 1 p.m. Music starts at 2 with Mr. 50s kicking off the show. Second act, Jim Quick and Coastline. Third act, the Tim Clark Band. Fourth act, Edwin McCain. Happy to be at this point, be able to announce that. Let's do it, man. Let's go sell some tickets and benefit cystic fibrosis with the Salt Air Jam, saltairjam.com. Thanks to all of you for tuning in tonight. We love you, mean it. Appreciate that. Thanks to all you guys that worked on the show and helped put this thing together. Sorry you had headphone problems. I just ordered a new one. It'll be here before the next show, the amp. So thanks to all the military that do what they do so that we can do this. And I'd like to say to each and every one of you, good night and God bless.